Development Alternatives Women for a New Era, or DAWN, is a network of feminist scholars, researchers and activists from the economic south working for economic and gender justice and sustainable and democratic development. This recording is made available by DAWN through its website with kind permission. Other recordings are available for download at www.dawnnet.org and may be used freely following proper citation. DAWN Podcasts. The voices of women creating a just world.
I'd like to say that it's been a pleasure for me to be part of this panel, because this panel is not really one that has the finely crafted speeches, but I see this panel as the women's networks and a global campaign on the gear, making ourselves accountable to the women's movements that are represented here by way of our individual reports on what has been achieved by the global network and by the different regions. And so this is now the turn for those who led the Southeast Asia campaign to do the same. So this is a conversation, and everything that we say here is really, as Charlotte says, something that should move us forward. The GA resolution of September 2009 is but a beginning of the next phase of the global campaign. There is much to be done. And this is exactly where we want to be clear on what needs to be done from here onwards. The second thing I'd like to say is that we have differentiated and, in fact, very contradicted relationship with the United Nations as women's movements. We love it, but we also hate it. It is not important in most of the work that we do, but at some moments, it becomes very important, especially if we want to save lives and to achieve certain political goals. We don't quite understand it, but at the same time, we endeavor to do so, especially if we have a need to do so, as we in fact, right now, have the need for. The GEAR campaign in Southeast Asia was led, as I said, by the Southeast Asia Women's Watch, which is one of the sub-regional formations within the Asia-Pacific Women's Watch network. Over a period of 2 to 3 years, the regional campaign utilized the APWW listserv to widely inform Southeast Asia-based women's organizations and women's rights and gender equality advocates of developments related to the ongoing General Assembly debates on the gender equality architecture, as well as to urge them to inform and lobby their governments to positively support language which would firm up commitments on the GEAR. Sea-Watch also conducted informal consultations with some government officials, UN representatives, and women's organizations in a few countries in Southeast Asia, Philippines, in Thailand, in Laos, and in Vietnam. Finally, it commissioned an in-depth case study on how UN institutional reforms related to the One UN pilot was proceeding and what its implications might be to the gender equality architecture global campaign. The core group members of both Sea-Watch and APWW, being veterans of UN conferences on women and in lobbying by the global women's movements, were from the beginning one of the more enthusiastic and consistent supporters of the GEAR campaign. They saw that the reform of the United Nations system that was based on the recommendations made by the 2006 United Nations Secretary General's high-level panel on system-wide coherence had enough support behind it in the General Assembly and within the UN bureaucracy. For women's movements, the UN reform was seen as an opportunity to position a gender equality architecture that was more effective or could be more effective, efficient, accountable, and more influential in co-determining both normative and operational matters that fell within the rubric of the United Nations. In reporting on the Southeast Asia GEAR campaign today, let me focus on two issues related to the GEAR campaign that were of principal concerns in the minds of women's organizations in this region, namely the issues of country-level presence and financing. So we will just focus on two aspects or two issues, country-level presence and financing, and I'm very glad that Pakistan had also given us a glimpse of the study that they did on the One UN program in that country. Women's organizations and groups that were involved in the Global GEAR campaign were at first not too sure on whether they should look at the One UN pilot process in relation to or as part of the Global GEAR campaign. They didn't exactly know how to link or what the contribution of that research or that that input might be to the global campaign which was directed at the UN General Assembly. Some said that these were, at the beginning, the One UN campaign was really a parallel campaign, and that first and foremost, we have to get the governments in the UN General Assembly to agree to a HQ level architecture for gender equality. Conceptually, however, there was no question in the minds of many that the two are linked, that the gender equality architecture, which was to be put up at the global level, has to be linked to country level and regional level structures, mechanisms, and processes. Even while, as I said, politically, it was not clear how opening up a discussion on the One UN program pilots could, at that moment, affect the dynamic of negotiations and stakes at the global level, where the campaign was focused on seeking high-level leadership of the composite entity for gender equality, which in and of itself was already a huge challenge in terms of political lobbying and in terms of investing efforts to seek country support for. However, some of us in the GEAR campaign network were convinced that despite this uncertainty of the linkage in relation to the campaign, we should at the very least begin to examine and understand what is going on at the country level in terms of the five pillars of UN reform: one plan, one budget, one leader, one set of management practices, and one house. This was particularly significant in light of the demand by women's organizations for a very strong operational role for the new entity, for the new gender equality entity. Surely, we didn't want a gender equality institutional mechanism in the UN system whose role was limited to simply policing the bureaucracy on their gender mainstreaming commitments. We wanted them to be able to catalyze programs at the level of the local and of the national where women's organizations were situated. Moreover, the Global GEAR campaigners have repeatedly emphasized the need for country ownership and strong operational presence of the new entity where, as I said, women's political work could be found. Sea-Watch, therefore, on its own and very quietly, and the report of which was eventually submitted to WIDU and the NCWGL at the global level, supported an exploratory study on the One Country program that was being piloted in Vietnam. And in fact, because of the interest generated by this study, we would like to think that we had encouraged other pilot, other studies of One Country pilot projects to be undertaken elsewhere, including, in fact, a follow-up study in Vietnam, which was intended to be carried out by the global campaign. What did we find out? And what we found out, particularly in relation to our global lobbying, you know, there are many things you can find out in relation to what how we do our work. But what did we find out which was important in terms of determining or shaping the strategic direction of the global campaign? Then this is these are some of these of the findings. One is that there was a gender program coordination group across 14 agencies operating in Vietnam, which was functioning, meeting regularly, and was meant to provide stronger coordination on gender equality and women's rights concerns. However, gender projects remain small and dispersed across a number of very little funds and that rested on bilateral partnerships only among two or three offices. So since this was a pilot, we were seeing that there was, of course, a first level or first stage coordination, and that real one united program was still a far off goal, and that what we were seeing were very small projects around which two or three UN agencies were collaborating and whose impact remained small and, in fact, even uncertain in the context of the huge inter-UN agency, more thematic programs that defined the one UN country plan being put in place in Vietnam. The positive outcome of coordination has been in ensuring that there is a strong interagency oversight and support of senior UN bureaucrats for whatever small gender projects were going on. But what does this tell us? No, this tells us that gender at the country level, through the mechanism of the Gender Program Coordination Group, also run the risk of becoming simply a gender police unless it is given the funds and the mandate to implement on-the-ground projects. So, okay. The other thing that we found out was really the lack of clarity on the role of civil society organizations at the country level. Now, we know, of course, that the UN, in its effort to harmonize and to make their work efficient, will always relate with government. I mean, and this is, in fact, a principal mandate of the United Nations. It is an intergovernmental body that is first and foremost supportive and in partnership with governments where it operates in. But the question is, where are the CSOs? In the current setup, which is quite disparate with four different programs and a plethora of independent funding initiatives, anybody of the UN system can catalyze a program or a project. And that is, in fact, a project that is closely linked or supported by, in partnership with civil society organizations, without necessarily having to go through a very strong government bureaucracy. And this has become a window of opportunity for us to engage with the United Nations and, in fact, use some of the catalytic programs of the UN to even advocate our own governments. Now, with the coherence and the one plan that will be put in place, the question is, what window of opportunity for CSOs using such mechanisms or programs for their advocacy, particularly to demand democratic accountability of their governments, would be left behind? And this is something that we should be able to follow through in the next phase. And then a quick word on the issue of financing for gender equality. Resources for the new gender equality architecture is another issue that has been consistently raised by women's organizations both from the North and the South, and at the global and as well as the national level. Sea-Watch and other South-based networks, including Dawn, had repeatedly said things to this effect, that all actors in development cooperation have shown inadequacy in making true gender equality commitments, and money have always failed to match rhetoric. So all actors in development cooperation, the donors, the institutional people, our own governments, no, including, in fact, some of our colleagues in civil society or NGOs, civil society organizations and NGOs that have a rhetoric on gender equality but actually fall short when it comes to prioritizing programs as well as funding for gender. In the course of the campaign, the global campaign of the GEAR, some groups had insisted, and Charlotte has actually mentioned this, that a $1 billion upfront fund for the new gender equality architecture must be demanded. But even just at the level of the demand, there was certain apprehension on the part of some of the campaigners at the global level. Oh, maybe we shouldn't really, you know, demand $1 billion at this point. It's going to be too difficult to get it. So we ended up, you know, coalescing around the language of ambitious funding. And again, Charlotte is forewarning us in her very gentle way of what does ambitious funding actually mean? Well, for some of us, it is $1 billion US dollars up front for the gender equality architecture. And it is that the larger proportion of funds must be assessed funds rather than voluntary funds. Again, some of us who know how the UN works and how funds are contracted are saying, but that is a very difficult demand. It is unrealistic. Even the UNFPA, with all of its funds, has a lot of it coming from the voluntary funding. But some of us feel that we should at least raise that issue or that demand, because it is not only for the gender architecture, it is for the entire UN. The UN is troubled financially at this time because many of its funding by rich countries especially are tied grants, and some of the rich countries are not even delivering on the quantity of aid but are more concerned with aid effectiveness. But we all knew that this was a steep demand, as I said. Nevertheless, the issue of financing for gender equality is one that will continue to focus on even after the new gender architecture is established. It will be instructive to know that in the case of the Vietnam study, we found out that there was in fact a competition for funds among the UN agencies, which we feel should not happen in the future. Again, we do not want a gender equality entity that is sitting on a throne with a USG on it, but devoid of real resources and power. Finally, and this is really the final word, we now have the September 14 GA resolutions that delivered to women's organizations the commitment by the governments of the United Nations, the establishment of the gender architecture led by the USDG. Much remains to be done, as Charlotte had identified or had listed down. But what we want to say at this point is that there are already, at this early stage, a strong enthusiasm or a beginning enthusiasm about nominating this or that woman or thinking about this and that person to be the head of the gender equality architecture. Now, what we would like to just say at this forum is let us not allow the issue of who will occupy. It is certainly one issue that we should watch out for. As everyone is saying, she should have established record for standing on women's rights and gender equality, but that is not to say that we will focus on all of the on the women candidates and be deflected from the real issues at hand, which is to work for a real, a powerful and resourced gender equality architecture from the global to the national level. Thank you.
This speech was brought to you by ISIS International. For more audio coverage of the Asia-Pacific NGO Forum on Beijing Plus 15, please tune in the ISIS website on www.isisinternational.org.